Simpson, numbers right here. Three on two, delivers. Simpson splits defenders, splits a third, high off the glass. My goodness. Duncan Robinson, he has had a big impact this last month, and you see why right there. Rachman takes the shot, now steps back, loads up a three, and he hits another one.
How about that? He got Mathias on his heel.
Here's Robinson, stepping up and beating the buzzer. Simpson, what a move around Thompson. Sets up Teske. Matthew steps in. Oh, yeah, a lot of hang time on that shot. Teske.
Look at this.
Doing it all.
Oh.
Simpson, wraparound pass. Sets up Wagner. Rachman gets the feet planted and hits the shot. Simpson. Dagger. Back-to-back Big Ten championships for Beilein and the Wolverines.
When I think about this, I think about a group we have that takes care of themselves off the floor. I go to my grave saying, they're not like party guys. They really understand right now, I got to eat right, I got to sleep right, I got to store energy. And it over a long time, that makes a big difference. So our guys really are dedicated to the cause, to the purpose of the team, the team, the team, and I'm going to do what's ever best for the team. I'll tell you what I did. One of the smartest things is I stopped coaching it so much. We were okay. We were usually 150 out of 300 defensively, and we were usually like, you know, maybe in the top 50 to top 20 offensively. I let other people become the voice. We still did all the strategy.
It's interesting when you watch him throw, man. His ball does not have the kind of arc and touch on it that you would expect a classic pocket passer to have. It's very flat, and quite honestly, to me, it's not very impressive. And on tape, I'm not a big Josh Rosen fan. I'm just not. I just don't see a lot of the hoopla surrounding him. He was on it right from the get-go. And it was funny because he was, like, powering the football where he wanted it to go. He was like, hey, if I need to put this right here on the hip outside on the sideline on this speed out, he just threw it there. And you're watching it, and you're going, see, this is not the guy who on film will spray the ball all over the place. And I think that caught people's attention because short, intermediate, and deep, he looked awesome.
I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's fantastic. I mean, he's won everywhere he's been. You know, he won at Lake Travis in high school. He won at Texas Tech. He won at Oklahoma, and he's won big everywhere he's been. Like, at the end of the day, you look at all the things going out the combine and all the drills, and, like, shouldn't winning matter?
The Cleveland Browns are in a great position. They got the first pick and the fourth pick. You go ahead and you take Barkley at number one because, I mean, the guy is a freak of nature, what he's able to do with the 40 and then his vertical leap and, you know, 29 reps on the bench press. I mean, I wish I could go 29 times at 225, but we know that's not possible anymore. And then you take that quarterback, you got your future. You got your quarterback of the future, and you got your running back of the future. And everything is set up for Dorsey, the new general manager with the Browns, for their future. And you can give some hope in Cleveland. Finally, there will be some hope in Cleveland that maybe they can get on track and end this long playoff drought.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Monday afternoon. I am. And I intend to make it that way, to continue it that way for the next 2 hours. Matter of fact, I intend to make it even better than it has been because now we are on the air with an opportunity to talk together. So it will indeed be better. Really good guest list today coming up on the Extravaganza. Coming up at 3:35, a little less than a half an hour from now, Anthony Broom, mazeandbrew.com. He is celebrating, as are all the folks up in Ann Arbor, as the Wolverines for the second consecutive season win the Big Ten Conference Tournament. And they didn't take an easy path. It wasn't like there were upsets before them that made them have to play, you know, just teams that got hot and upset the conference heavyweights. No, they had to go through Michigan State and Purdue in the semifinal and final rounds, the two top teams in the conference for really almost all of the entire season. The only team that can really make a claim to being a part of that, you know, a very elite part of the conference would be Ohio State. And Ohio State, you know, fell a little bit toward the end of the regular season. They lost a couple, two of their last four, and then they lost to Penn State for the third time this season in the their first game of the Big Ten tournament. So Ohio State really, you know, not probably on the same level as Michigan State and Purdue. That was the cream of the crop. That's the best that the Big Ten had to offer. And the Wolverines were able to take them apart. And neither game was especially close. Really, really impressed by what the Wolverines were able to pull off for the second straight season, winning the Big Ten Conference Tournament. Anthony Broom will talk about it with us coming up at 3:35. At 4:10, We're going to talk to our friend Dennis Maniloff about some of what you just heard at the end of the montage there, and that would be NFL scouting combine analysis you just heard from Lewis Riddick, Ari Temkin, and Mike Wells. But we're going to talk to Dennis about who looked the best out there in Indianapolis among the quarterbacks and who looked the best overall, because some of the new reports coming out of the combine, coming out of Indy, are that it might not be such a lock that the Browns take the number one quarterback or a quarterback number one, that Saquon Barkley may have, what do they like to call it, the underwear Olympics? He may have underwear Olympics himself into the number one spot in this draft. Would the Browns really go running back number one and then the best quarterback, whoever doesn't get taken with 2 and 3, then take that guy number four? It's a possibility. We'll talk to Maniloff about that. And since Maniloff not only covers the Browns out there in Cleveland, he also covers the Cavaliers. We'll talk to him about the Cavaliers' ongoing struggles and absolute inability to defend anybody. The latest team to torch them offensively was the Denver Nuggets 2 nights ago, and they just looked hideous. Talking about the Cavaliers, they cannot close out on anybody. And we're not talking about the Warriors here. This isn't the hot shooting, you know, Houston Rockets here. We're talking about the Denver Nuggets here. It's a little bit of a different animal. The Denver Nuggets just took the Cavaliers apart, put up about 70, I think it was, in the first half. And this Denver Nuggets team is just clinging to the eighth spot right now in the Western Conference. They just put the Cavaliers on blast.
And meanwhile, later today, it's a Pistons-Cavs, one of those matchups later on tonight. So we'll see if the Cavs defense has decided to learn anything.
I'm glad you brought up the Pistons, because I freaking love the fact that on the heels of multiple national reports that Stan Van Gundy's about to have his presidency ripped from him, on the heels of national reports that say if they don't make the playoffs, he's going to have his coaching job ripped from him, the inspired Pistons respond with 2 straight losses. Neither one of them especially competitive. They get blasted by the Magic. They get blasted by the Heat. And now the Stan Van sloppy watch is on in full. And I just love that, Kush. I mean, literally, right after we got done talking about it, you know, Stan Van Gundy may not make this, survive this journey if they don't get to the postseason. And here we sit, the Pistons now at 29-34, 5 games out of, under 500, beg pardon, a full 4 games back of the Miami Heat for just the 8th spot in the Eastern Conference. So you can tell how much the Pistons players were inspired by that news. Man, we got to do this for Coach. We got to save Stan's job. We got to make sure we make, not so much. And as you point out, now they have the Cavaliers. So something's got to give. Cavaliers can't cover anybody. Pistons just flat out stink. Something will give tonight. That's in Detroit, is it not, Jim?
No, this one's at the queue tonight.
It is. I thought the Cavaliers had just finished their big long homestand. So
no, they got one more. Then they clear
then they
out for the West Coast.
Roadie, don't they?
West Coast trip coming up. And then, of course, the MAC tournament going to be at the queue as it always is later this week. So, yeah, Cavs go on the road after this one. And you mentioned something's got to give. Cavs are 2-4 since the break. Random FYI, 4-4 since the trades. Meanwhile, since the break, the Pistons are 1-5.
How about that? That's just fantastic. So that's a lot to talk about in its own right. We'll talk about the Cavaliers and the matchup with Pistons, too. That'll be at about 4:10 this afternoon. And then at 4:40, I mentioned just in passing on the way to praising the Wolverines for winning the Big Ten Conference Tournament. The Ohio State Buckeyes did not. it's hard to lose 3 times to the same team in a single season, and the Buckeyes made it look pretty good. they lost on a buzzer beater the first time. They lost in somewhat of a blowout the second time. And now how about a game-winning dunk? What the heck? Why not? Why not just make it, the wide variety of ways to lose for the Ohio State Buckeyes against the Penn State Nittany Lions? Penn State beat them on a game-winning dunk with about 1.2 seconds, or 2.1 seconds left, I think it was, Kush.
The only positive I can think of to try to spin that for the Buckeyes is after they get this finish, this week and a half layoff, actually almost 2 weeks for the Buckeyes, they play that game on Friday, at least barring something weird, which would have to happen many rounds into the tournament, they won't have to see Penn State again. And that's assuming Penn State gets even a bid, because my understanding is, despite being the Buckeyes three times this year, they're still very much on the wrong side of the bubble, if you're depending on which bracketology update you're looking at.
Yeah, I think they need to do more than just beat the team that has become their B, which is the Buckeyes. They need to go a little deeper in that tournament and maybe do what Michigan did.
Agreed.
Or even get to that title game and lose it before they would have a more comfortable lock on making the tournament. By the way, you mentioned that 2 weeks that the Buckeyes will have before they play. I was just asking you this off the air, obviously. We might as well carry the conversation onto the airwaves. The goofiness of the Big Ten having their conference tournament over now is just something I'm not following, processing, able to understand why they started the Big Ten Conference Tournament as early as they did. You know, the MAC obviously gets started this week and ends this coming weekend.
First round, by the way, of games tonight. Bowling Green's first round game we'll have on Talk Radio 100.7, 6:30 the coverage time, FYI.
Very well done, sir. So, you know, the MAC and so many other tournaments are going on this week, and then it all culminates in Selection Sunday on Sunday, and you know, Big Ten's done. They're not going to play the Big Ten teams for roughly 2 weeks. And while it's certainly fair for all of them, or unfair for all of them, as it were, that they all have a long time to wait, I especially feel for Michigan, because that's the team that is flying high. That's the team that is red hot. Again, they didn't just beat, you know, a couple of teams that got hot and upset the top teams in the conference to win that conference tournament. They had to beat the two top teams in the conference. They had to beat Michigan State and Purdue, and they did so. Notwithstanding Nebraska, who they pounded by about 20, but they had to really, you know, fight and win a couple of very tough games. They did so going away, as I said. They beat Michigan State by 9, and they beat Purdue by nearly 20, 19, I guess. Ended up being 9. It was nearly a 20-point lead for most of that second half. I guess I kind of got away from you a little bit there, but as I watched that game in the second half, and I could not believe, I kept waiting for the Purdue run that was going to, you know, take control of that game, and it never happened. Every time they did make a run, Michigan fought it off and obviously ended up winning by a relatively comfortable 9. So this is a team who's probably like, can we start the tournament, please? Can we play Tuesday night? Can we get rolling and just ride this wave? And now for 2 weeks, it's cool your jets, go back to practice, run some laps, work on free throw shooting, try to recapture the magic we had during the tournament and the late season run, because, you know, we should not discount the fact that the Wolverines are now on a 2-4-6-8-9 game winning streak, having won their last six and then the three in the tournament, Kush. So they're, you know, a little bit unfortunate for Michigan that they have to kind of, you know, chill now for a while.
Yeah, usually in most years, and FYI for all Big Ten fans, Buckeye, Wolverine, even Spartans, whoever may be listening, everything will be returning to quote-unquote normal next year. The whole reason, as we know this year, it was pushed early ahead a week is because they're using the same venue, the Garden in New York, that the Big East always uses, so you can't have two conferences using it at literally exactly the same time. That's part of the reason. I have checked. They're going to be rotating back between Chicago and Indy like they have been, so it'll be on the normal schedule for next week. But, yeah, for a team like Michigan especially, we got on one of those conference tournament runs. Say it was the normal schedule, so it would have been yesterday's, but it would have been Selection Sunday instead of a week before. Well, then if you're on the depending on if you're the Thursday or the Friday game, you're either then getting 3 or 4 days off as opposed to almost 2 weeks. And one has to think that, you know, might have a little bit of effect on them. But then, as you pointed out, everybody is in the same unfair boat on that kind of regard. And the other part of what we were talking about before the show on this one is, why, you know, other than the Big Ten, why are some of these others, you know, doing it this early? And my answer to you was, outside of the Big Ten and their quirk of venue, which is all this was this year, that's why next year it'll be back during this particular week, is that most of these other leagues have been doing that. You know, for a while, you get a couple of small ones, and then for TV purposes, they stagger. You got, like, you got 2 tonight, 5 tomorrow, another one on Wednesday. I'm talking championship games of small leagues that actually hand out the bids. Then you get the bulk of them as we get into the later part of the week and next Saturday and Selection Sunday especially. But that's just how most of these other littler conferences doing it. However, I will add one thing, if I may. You know, it's one thing for a Big Ten or an ACC or whoever, and thank goodness the Big Ten will be coming back to actual Midwest areas again next year. Did you? I don't know if you caught any of the Big South one yesterday, the one that was won by the kid on the buzzer beater for Radford.
Radford over Liberty.
If you are a small league, and yes, I'm saying this out loud, in this market, knowing that we are in MAC territory, sorry, the Q, that's how it should be done for all the smaller leagues. Stagger a couple days, have it all home road. That atmosphere that I saw at the end of that game, that when I was flipping around, I caught the last maybe 5-7 minutes of it. That's what I would love to see for all the smaller leagues, an actual home road kind of atmosphere, not some neutral site in question mark that maybe gets 200 people in the stands. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing for the bigger conferences to go to the neutral sites in your region, but all the smaller conferences should take a cue from conferences like the Big South yesterday. Play those on home road. You will get the type of atmosphere you're really looking for, because that's what I saw at the end of that one.
You know, it's an interesting point. I'm not going to disagree with it outright, just to maybe question some things. Is the goal, though, of having a conference tournament with the right to go to the big dance to just have the fans that are already excited get excited in a home road type of tournament, or to expose the conference to other people who don't always watch it and who don't know that they play really good basketball in the Big South, or that they play really good basketball in the MAC? You know, for example, in Northeast Ohio, yeah, they got Kent State nearby and they got Akron nearby, but they don't get to see Toledo very often, obviously. You know, I'm talking about going to the Q.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get to see Toledo or whichever teams, Eastern Michigan or anybody else that might make it to this show, Buffalo. So I think you have a two-pronged goal there, and you have to decide, I guess, which one is more important to you. Getting the excitement of that building, as you pointed out, when the kid hit the shot for Radford, because it's a local, you know, home game, and trying to expose other people who don't normally watch your brand to your brand. And I think that's what the benefit is. There are going to be people in Northeast Ohio, and maybe even from further away, who are going to drive to the Q because, A, it's at the Q. That's pretty darn cool. It's not at Savage. That's, of course, no knock on Savage, one of the best arenas in the MAC and one of the best arenas of its size anywhere in the country. But you understand the point.
Yes.
You get to go to the Q where LeBron and all the guys play. And again, because it's in Northeast Ohio rather than a home game, you're going to have people who are like, you know what, I'm going to go watch that game. I don't really watch a ton of MAC, but I'm going to go watch whoever this is in this, you know, this quarterfinal, this semifinal, this final. And I think it might get more eyeballs on the product, and I think for the smaller schools, that's got to be a goal.
My counter to that, because if that argument was made 10-plus years ago, I'd have no choice but to side with it.
Yeah.
But today, nowadays, so many of these games are on TV. First of all, the ESPNs right now seem, and I lost my list. I might have left it somewhere else, but I list out where all the games are because I use this week as a primer. You know, I look at some of these smaller games and try to tune into a little bit of them so I know, okay, should I pick that team in my bracket for an upset next week? Never works, of course, but I'm still going to do it. Most of these games are, at least championship games, are on some kind of TV. And if you're talking about people wanting to, oh, maybe I'll check that out as it go to the arena, nowadays, you don't even necessarily have to do that. Perfect example. Friday night's MAC semifinal games are both, I caught, are going to be on the CBS Sports Network. So even smaller conferences are getting now more than just their championship game on some kind of TV. That wasn't the case 10-plus years ago for a lot of these small leagues, as one would have to correctly assume. So if you're talking about getting butts in this...
I don't disagree with that, Jim, but and I'm not saying that MAC or Big South tournament basketball is the same as, quote, playoff hockey, where you have to experience it in person to really appreciate it. But I think there is a little bit of an element of going to see it is different than watching it on TV. There are 15 basketball games on a night, it seems.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, in the winter and in the spring and where we are now, there are, I mean, because of all of the different networks between CBS Sports Network, which is born, Fox Sports Network, which is born, NBC Sports Network, which has been born, along with the traditional 18 ESPN networks that there are, there are so many games on constantly. Any given Saturday, plus they're on different channels too. On, you know, a lot of the other ones you don't even think about. But if you scan your channel guide, I have DirecTV. I don't care what you have. If you have Dish or if you have a cable service, or whatever. But if you scan your guide, you just see college basketball, college basketball. You hit tons of games.
Yes.
And to me, Jim, especially unless it's Duke playing North Carolina, or, you know, I don't know, Michigan playing Michigan State, or Ohio State playing Michigan State, or something, you know, crazy with the national powers and traditional big school rivalries, they all run together. The Florida Atlantic game isn't any more appealing to me than the Toledo game is. I mean, if I'm not a Toledo.
Right, I know what you're saying.
It isn't any more appealing to me than the Radford Liberty game. Isn't any more appealing to me than the Austin Peay, the things that you mentioned. They're just all on. And you may flip around, and you may just have it on in the background as you do your chores that day, or you build the birdhouse you're out in the garage piddling around with. You understand the point. It's just, it's easy to just get, yeah, it's there, but there are a million of them there.
Yeah.
It's different. The game's in my backyard. You know, if I live in, I don't know, suburban Cleveland, I got the bunch of college basketball at the queue this weekend. You know, semifinal game, quarterfinal game, semifinal games, and a championship game. I just may be like, damn it, I'm going to go buy it. Tickets are so cheap.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they ain't going to be sold out, I'll tell you that, too.
That's right. I can't exactly get, afford to take my family to the Cavaliers, but I'm going to go watch the MAC semifinal game, go root on an Ohio MAC team, whether it be Akron, like I said, or maybe it's Toledo, or maybe it's Bowling Green catching fire, whatever happens. I can afford to take them down there for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get some NBA style concessions there in an NBA arena. We can get down in the lower bowl and get nice and close and not break our bank. It's just, I don't know. It's different than TV, Jim. I think it sells itself. The reason they try to go out of their own home venues for these games is to sell and market the programs, the conference, the product to people that normally just aren't going to see it in person.
And there's definitely some validity. I'm not discounting the validity on that in some regards. It is certainly there. I'm thinking of ways for if you're a smaller league, you know, to make the atmosphere if you're watching it on TV, which again, something that wasn't true for these smaller leagues 10 years ago, is that a lot of them, are on some kind of TV. Plus, I'm also a believer, since we live in the world where every league has a conference tournament to determine its automatic bid, even the elites of the Ivy League, of course, Bob, have succumbed to this. They have a quick tournament Friday and Saturday and Sunday of this coming weekend, too. They didn't used to have that either. You got to look at every advantage to give your regular season champ the best possible avenue to get to the tournament and not get upset. And sometimes
so you're saying you want you think Buffalo, for example, the MAC champion, overall regular season champion, should have a home game in the MAC championship tournament in the MAC tournament because they deserve the shot at the bid.
You don't want to necessarily lose that. I mean, by my count, already four small leagues, and we've only had five total bids handed out, and one of them's to the Big Ten. Four small leagues have already lost their conference champions, and they're going to get stuck in the NIT because of that. And it's about trying to give your number ones, in this case, as you mentioned, for the MAC Buffalo, a little bit more of an advantage. And playing at home would clearly be an advantage. Here's another one. If you do a homer.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Jim. Hold on, if I may. You're right. It would clearly be an advantage for them, and I don't know that I want that advantage for them. For example, if the MAC East champion is Buffalo, and the MAC West champion is Toledo, I don't want Toledo to have to go through Buffalo at Buffalo for a chance at the tournament. I would like to see that played on a neutral. They're both division champions within their conference. I would like to see that played on a neutral site in an exciting atmosphere and you know, let the chips fall where they may. If Buffalo wants to get there, win the game.
I see where you're coming from in that, but as we've talked with Coach Kowalczyk over the course of the year, in a way, the MAC divisions in basketball technically mean absolutely nothing. It's about your overall conference record. That's why Buffalo gets the one and Toledo is the two, despite both of them getting to say we were division champions.
Exactly.
Here's another small thing. If you were to do one of these small tournaments on a home road thing, you know what else you have to do by definition of being at home road and not at a neutral site? You can't play on back-to-back days. So there's no that weird team that played that's a bad this year that's already played a game or two getting on a little hot run. to catch the top type of team sleeping. I've seen it happen plenty of times because you're playing on those back-to-back-to-back-to-back kind of days. If you're doing home road, you have to take it. There has to be a day off for some one team to come travel to your place, basically. So that might help to nip an under 500 eight seed from getting on a big run, because you still, as a smaller league, and unfortunately every year we have to have this discussion about how, unfortunately, guys, the Mid-American Conference in basketball is unfortunately a one-bid league. This year, Buffalo is the top seed. You technically would like to get that top seed as much advantage to get to the tournament. So you as the conference are putting your best foot forward.
I guess. Especially if you have one conference regular season champion, Jim, that dominated the conference.
Yes, especially in those cases.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you have a dominant team, then yes, that's your best foot forward. But if somebody is barely a conference champion in the regular season, if somebody is, you know, a one seed over the two seed, or, you know, first overall winner and over the second place team by a game, I don't know that it's some massive step, best foot forward to say, let's try to rig the system and let's try to game the system so that that team that finished first gets a home game to go to it. I would, like I said, in this particular case, and maybe I'm just being, you know, hypersensitive to the locality here, but I don't think Toledo should have to play a road game at Buffalo to have a shot at the big dance in this, just as good of a shot at the big dance as Buffalo does, just because one team finished one game better than the other.
I'll close this with this. As much advantage in those situations that I'm laying out that it might have, you still have to go on out on the court and play the game. Example, the Atlantic Sun conducts their tournament this way. They have three rounds, a day or two off between games because it's all home road. Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, ran away with that league. They gave up 108 points to Lipscomb, who I've never heard of, and lost at home to lose the bid. So you still have to actually go out in the court and play the game. I'm just saying, try to get, you know, give some advantages. And a lot of these small leagues have been trying to fiddle with this. Remember the MAC a couple years ago fiddled with this? Their top two seeds, remember they were getting like triple buys, and that was just weird, so they put it back to the way it is right now. Just try to think. I like thinking about weird things like this at this time of year.
Yeah, no, it's definitely good for debate and good for discussion. I'm glad you pointed it out. But it is 3:35 now. We got to talk to our friend Anthony Broom from MaizeandBrew.com to talk about the Wolverines' conference win over. And if Christian had his way, Michigan would have had to play at East Lansing in the semi.
No, that's only for small leagues.
And
the
then
big boys
at
can
Purdue,
do whatever they want.
At Lafayette for the championship game, if Christian had his way. Yeah, sure, make the caveat about size. The point is the same all the way around. But let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day today. It is about Michigan winning their second straight Big Ten tournament title yesterday, 75-66 over Purdue, and winning their second straight Big Ten tournament title. The Wolverines have now won eight straight Big Ten tournament games, as they had to begin their run in both years in the second round, which means four wins to win the title each year. The back-to-back championships also represent for Michigan the second and third times they have done it since the event came into existence in 1998, which was the first time that they have done it. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. And we'll talk more about Michigan's win and the Big Ten and maybe the Big Dance at large coming up with Anthony Broom next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
18. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
When I think about this, I think about a group we have that takes care of themselves off the floor. I go to my grave saying, they're not like party guys. They really understand right now, I got to eat right, I got to sleep right, I got to store energy. And it over a long time, that makes a big difference. So our guys really are dedicated to the cause, to the purpose of the team, the team, the team, and I'm going to do what's ever best for the team.
It's hard to argue with him when a guy has won back-to-back Big Ten Conference Tournament Championships. He knows what it takes to get the guys ready on a day-to-day or night-to-night basis. And joining us now to talk about the Wolverines and that second straight Big Ten Conference Tournament Championship from the Wolverines website, maizeandbrew.com, it's Anthony Broom back again right here on The Ticket in Toledo. Anthony, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you guys?
We are outstanding. It was a fun tournament. And you know, before we talk about the fun of the tournament and congratulate Michigan and talk about what this means, by the way, and I see the headline on the website right now is the fact that the Wolverines are up to number 7 in the AP poll after winning that Big Ten championship. But before we talk about all of that, the timing of it. Jim Kuchlin explained it. It's because of venues and everything else. They had to, you know, hold it. They held it at Madison Square Garden. They had to make room for the Big East tournament, et cetera, et cetera. Everything else that's going on. I don't like the fact that the Wolverines, who are red hot, now have to cool their jets for nearly 2 weeks before they get back out on the court again. And obviously that goes for Michigan State and Purdue and everybody else in the Big Ten who's going to make that tournament, but especially for the team that was the hottest. What do you make of this early tournament, you know, that the Wolverines just won, and now they have to sit and cool their jets?
Yeah, you know, the timing is definitely weird. I would call it a concern. I mean, people are downplaying that, but we've never seen anything like this before for a Michigan team coming out of the Big Ten tournament. So they are hot. You certainly don't want them to cool off in that regard, but on the flip side of that, you can also make the case they just played 4 games in 4 days. I'm sure they could use the rest, you know, especially a guy like Isaiah Livers pulls up with an ankle injury in that game yesterday. You know, it's good in that regard. I think the challenge will be, you know, keeping them loose, keeping them kind of on schedule. I mean, maybe they do some sort of scrimmage or something like that in the next week or so, but yeah, it's a concern, I think, and that's going to be something to watch, not just with Michigan, but with all these teams, you know, in the Big Ten as well. I mean, even Michigan State will have had just as much time. Purdue obviously has a long layup. So everyone that's going to get in kind of has to deal with this. So, it was a fun Big Ten tournament, but we'll see if it ends up costing the conference when it comes to, you know, having their teams go deep in this tournament coming up in just over a week.
Yeah, and you're right. Obviously, it affects everybody that's in the conference. They all have to wait a long time. The only reason I picked Michigan to highlight in this, of course, is nobody's hotter. Michigan State was hotter coming into the tournament. They had won 13 in a row, I think it was, before Michigan took them down. And now it's the Wolverines who have won 9 in a row, including the 3 in the tournament. And so, you know, when you win in the NCAAs, obviously you may not be the best team. You know, history has proven sometimes it's just the hottest team that's riding the momentum. And nothing kills momentum quite like 2 weeks of sitting on your hands and doing layup drills and free throw shooting drills and, you know, running laps at practice for 2 solid weeks. That's the thing. So you're right about scrimmaging. Maybe there's some way they can do that. But let's get into it now. Let's talk about that road. You know, they didn't slide into the Big Ten Conference Championship by beating teams that upset the teams at the top. They had to play the teams at the top back to get back against Sparty and Purdue. When you're able to do that and to do so relatively handily in both games, it shows this isn't just a hot team, doesn't it? This is a team that is built for winning and winning high leverage games at high stakes moments. And in the Big Ten tournament certainly isn't the NCAA tournament, but this is a team that I have to believe nobody wants to see on their bracket in the first couple of rounds coming up when the tournament starts.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. I mean, it would be one thing if, you know, they just won 4 games in 4 days and they were playing above their heads, but you know, this looks and feels like a team that is just that good. I mean, they beat Michigan State twice. Really, all things considered, probably should have beat Purdue twice. Had a chance to, you know, win the game at Purdue as well. But, you know, this is a good basketball team. And it's a really good basketball team. I know they're up to number 7 in the AP poll. I think this is obviously by far the best defensive team they've ever had. I think it's the deepest that they've ever been. So when you look at all those things and, you know, you look at what makes a team good and dangerous in March, a lot of times it's taking care of the basketball and guard play. And, you know, I don't know if there's a point guard in the country right now that's playing better ball than Xavier Simpson is. I mean, when that guy is on, it does seem like, you know, this team kind of goes to a different level. So they have all the ingredients and their coach for, you know, all things considered, maybe pound for pound, one of the best college basketball coaches there is out there. So, a lot of people go into the tournament with their 5 stars and their ones and dones. But I think if you're a Michigan fan, you feel pretty good about what you have. And even, you know, yeah, you're going to have some time. You're going to have a layover to kind of sit back and, you know, relax a little bit. And obviously you don't want to lose that edge. That's going to be a challenge for them. But, you know, at the same time, you kind of have a little bit extra time to scout too. I mean, you got all these conference tournaments that'll be fired up this week. A lot of possible opponents on the table. So, you know, they're going to use a lot of that time to study too. And, you know, if you give a guy like John Beilein, you know, a lot of time to break you down and things like that, you have to feel good about their chances. So there are pros and cons to all of it, but no, this isn't a team that's just playing above its head. I mean, when you look at in a year that's kind of wide open in college basketball, I have no problem saying this team is absolutely, you know, a Final Four caliber a team heading into this tournament.
We're talking to Anthony Broom of MaizeAndBrew.com as we break down the Wolverines' victory over Purdue in the championship game yesterday. They had to get through Michigan State in the semis. They took care of Nebraska in their quarterfinal round, and now it is just a waiting game until they see where they're going to be seated and who their opponents will be in the national championship tournament. Jim Cushland's here as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
And you mentioned it a moment or two ago, Anthony, and I didn't play this clip to bring you in, but Bob, we played in the montage John Beilein referencing his defense. How important is it relative to, say, last year or other years that in some ways, statistically, this is one of the better defenses Michigan has ever sported? And we know at times in dicey games, not necessarily the first round, but in rounds beyond that in the upcoming NCAA tournament, you're going to need some defensive stops here and there. How important is this defense to a possible deep run for this team?
I mean, it's really important. And I think there was, I forget which day it was. I think it may have been one of the days where the Big Ten Network had the broadcast. I think John Crispin was on the call and he said, oh, you know, this team is very underrated defensively. Well, no, they're not. They were, I think, the ninth rated team in defensive efficiency in the country. So we're not just talking about one of the better defenses Michigan has had. We're talking about one of the better defenses in all of college basketball right now. And, you know, a lot of times the recipe for Michigan's success has been, you know, live by the three, die by the three. And this is a team now that I certainly don't think this is, you know, for as good defensively as they are, it may be one of John Beilein's lesser teams in terms of being able to shoot the three. So to me, it's no longer live by the three, die by the three. It's, you know, if this team isn't shooting well, their defense can still win them games. And that's, you know, that's a complete 180 from kind of what the recipe has been. So I don't really know what the turning point was. I think that there was that point last year where, you know, things were kind of trending the wrong direction. Michigan was called a white-collar team by Illinois. And since then, I mean, this has been a program that they've really flipped the switch there defensively. And I think that that's a huge key for them. I mean, they're not just – they are no longer one-dimensional. And, you know, we're talking about defenses in college basketball. They've – one of the knocks on them in years has been the defense and their lack of size. And they have both now.
We're talking to Anthony Broom about the Wolverines and their win in the Big Ten Conference Tournament Championship. And now it's just a waiting game, as we mentioned, a long time to wait for this. Based on where the AP poll numbers just came out, as I pointed out, after the Wolverines win, they're up to 7. That doesn't necessarily mean they're the 7th best team in the country, but right now that's where they're ranked, according to the AP. Does that give us any insight, or does the outcome of all of the other tournaments change everything? And I'm sure it will to some degree, but I guess I'm basically asking for your opinion right now. Do you have any insight as to how high a seed the Wolverines might get?
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people, and we've gotten the questions about this, you know, it's, you know, since they're a 7th seed, does it mean they're, you know, an automatic 2 seed or things like that? I think they're probably a 4 seed. You probably will see them go up as high as a 3. I'd be very surprised if they shot up to a 2, but, you know, anything lower than a 4, I think they're pretty much locked in at 4 at the very least. But, you know, there's all kinds of things that they slot in there. They'll slot these teams 1 through 68, and, you know, geography will certainly be a part of it. And, you know, I would not, you know, the question is their resume better than Michigan State's? And that's a argument that I've kind of seen on social media today. There's arguments on both sides of it. I think that all things considered, Michigan may have a little bit better of a resume. So whether that comes down to a 2 seed or whether they get to play just down the road in Detroit in the first round, there's a lot of conference tournaments to still play out, a lot of things that can still happen that will alter things. So where we stand today, I think a 4 seed, I think a 3 seed is pretty possible. I'd be surprised if they went much higher.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's fair. Not only is that a fair thing to surmise on your part, I think it would be a fair place for them to be as well, based on, you know, the season, you know, and I guess maybe that's something to talk about too, Anthony. Is I was going to say the season, you know, resume. When the committee gets together and puts all of this together, it reminds me of the college football discussions, you know, with the college football playoff committee. You know, are we talking about the team that's the best right now or the team that's had the best season from start to finish? Because getting hot and being, you know, better right now than other teams You know, certainly they were better than Michigan State, but Michigan State had a better season. They were better than Purdue yesterday, but Purdue has had a better season overall. How should the committee, and how do you think the committee does that? Is it about who's playing the best right now? Obviously, Michigan would be a very high seed in that case. Or, no, who has, you know, stood the test of time going all the way back to the start of the season?
Yeah, well, I think especially this year when you look at that Big Ten schedule kind of being condensed because the conference tournament was going to be a week earlier, you know, things certainly ebbed and flowed for a lot of teams in the conference. I know Michigan had a stretch where it seemed like they were playing games every 2 days, and then – you know, they got through that pretty well, but then after that, they looked gassed. You know, they had their kind of mid-season lull. Michigan State had a little bit of a lull there. They didn't necessarily lose some of the games that Michigan did, but, you know, I think that that's something that the committee should probably take into consideration, the condensed schedule. I mean, it is a full body of work. I mean, and the thing of it, too, is, you know, it seems like every year we do this little dance in December where, you know, Michigan will drop a couple real games they shouldn't have dropped in non-conference play. Even, you know, before the new year, they had the loss to LSU. At the time, the loss to Ohio State, at Ohio State looked pretty bad, but, you know, that's why you look at the whole body of work. You look at what Ohio State ended up being. And every year we do this dance with Michigan where, you know, oh, well, here we go. What's, you know, this team just doesn't have it. Every year we're having this conversation going into March. They're playing their best basketball. You know, the body of work looks pretty good. So I think you need to weigh it a little more heavier to what you've done in conference play and after the new year. Cause, you know, all teams in college basketball are, you kind of use that first month or two to figure things out. But, you know, I honestly, the committee is going to do what it's going to do. I think there's always a little bit of recency bias there. There's certainly going to be some, you know, maneuvering of teams based on the host sites and things like that. So it's a really fluid process, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, Michigan is sitting pretty favorably with where they're looking at going to this tournament.
We're talking Anthony Brew, MasonBrew.com, talking about the Wolverines. Big Ten tournament tournament is over now. Wolverines do win. They take down Purdue in the final, Michigan State in the semifinal. I'm going to ask you one quick one on Ohio State and Penn State just briefly before Jim Cushman gets you again. You know the old adage about it being so difficult to beat a team three times. Penn State did it to Ohio State. I thought Ohio State might be a bigger factor in that tournament, but that's just a team they can't get past. What do you see as Ohio State's chances and seeding going into the tournament based on their, not first round because they had a bye, but their first loss in their first game of this tournament?
Yeah, you know, the thing with them is, you know, I just talked about how that them beating Michigan way back in December. You know, obviously, people at the time thought it, you know, was a bad loss for Michigan. But again, the body of work is pretty good. I do think, to a certain extent, and I said this with you guys a couple of weeks ago when we previewed the rematch in Ann Arbor. I do feel like that Ohio State team has kind of played above its head throughout the year, and you know that's a credit to, you know, they have, you know, maybe the best player in the conference in Bates Diop. You've got Chris Holtman who has done a tremendous job there. So, in terms of seeding, I mean, you're probably looking at a 5 seed for them, somewhere in that 5 to 6 range. Again, I could see the Big Ten getting docked a little bit for, you know, having a quote unquote down year, but, you know, the body of work, like we just talked about, it is pretty good. And, you know, I don't think they should be docked too much, but, you know, losing to a team three times is incredibly hard. And, you know, obviously we saw that with Michigan against Purdue, but you know, I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to see now that there's a long layoff, how these Big Ten teams end up being. You know, they're done at the same time as I think the Patriot League is still going on right now, so you're done before even all those teams. So it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the seeding and where they send these teams.
Yeah, it really is. Jim Cushing's got one more question.
And that's actually kind of where I wanted to speculate for a minute, the whole notion of the down Big Ten year. Right now we've all been pretty, and this is probably a pretty good assumption, 4 definite locks of Michigan, Ohio State, along with Michigan State and Purdue. But based on what we just saw, and with all Big Ten teams now done, I think that's going to be it. I think Nebraska had their chance down the stretch, and they weren't able to do it. And then, you know, Michigan in their first game or a second game for Michigan, I should say, crushed them. I think that takes them off the board. And just beating Ohio State three times, I don't think that's going to be enough for the committee that we were talking about. Committee's going to, as you said, Anthony, committee's going to do what the committee does. I don't think three wins against Ohio State and not much else is going to benefit Penn State. So as we sit here, just under a week until we find this all out on Selection Sunday, I think it's going to be only four for the Big Ten. Is that what you're thinking at this point, or is there any chance the committee surprises us and gives a fifth bid to a Penn State or a Nebraska?
Yeah, well, I mean, between Penn State and Nebraska, I certainly think Nebraska would have the leg up there. But, you know, to me, that's the four that you mentioned are going to be the four that get in, and I think that's going to be it, which is weird reason. You know, we've seen the Big Ten get, what, eight or nine teams in there before, so it is crazy. And, you know, the last time I was on, I said that I do think it was a little more top heavy, but as I kind of, you know, get a full picture of the conference when you know, are watching all these games in, you know, 3 or 4 days, yeah, it was a down year. I'm totally willing to change my tune on that. It was a down year in the conference. You know, Iowa is usually pretty good. Wisconsin, you know, a streak of, what was it, 20 straight years making the NCAA tournament is done now. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. But, you know, like, what I won't change my tune on is that I do think the four teams at the top, and definitely the top three, Michigan, Michigan State, and Purdue, you know, I think all three of those teams have a chance to go pretty deep. And I know Purdue has scuffled lately, but they still have, you know, they still have the ingredients to be a nightmare too. So down here for sure, but I think that, you know, when we're talking about Sweet 16 or Elite Eight, I think, you know, the Big Ten will be mentioned there again.
I think that's fair to say as well. We're talking to Anthony Broome. Anthony, really good stuff. It was a fun tournament. Obviously, a little too early for my taste. Now we got to sit and wait while all the other tournaments are played out this week and get to Selection Sunday. And then, of course, John Beilein can try to continue to work that magic in the big dance. We'll see where that seating goes. It would be very cool, by the way, if they found a way to get to be able to play in Detroit. But that'll be up to the committee. Anthony, keep up the great work. Follow Anthony's work and all the great guys at Maize and Brew, maizeandbrew.com, the Wolverines' great fan site on SB Nation. Thanks so much, Anthony.
Of course, anytime.
You got it. All right, it's 4:01, so let's catch up now. We'll get our top of the hour local sports center coming your way. And after that, Dennis Maniloff joins us next to talk about the NFL scouting combine. Do the Browns have an idea of what they want to do at number one now, and is it not a quarterback? Also, the Cavaliers can't guard anybody. That's good news for the Pistons, whom they play tonight. We'll hit that story as well with Maniloff coming up right here on the ticket.
Simpson, numbers right here. 3-on-2, delivers. Simpson splits defenders. Splits the third. High off the glass. My goodness. Duncan Robinson has had a big impact this last month, and you see why right there. Rathbone takes the shot, now steps back, loads up a three, and he hits another one.
How about that? He got Mathias on his heel.
Here's Robinson stepping up and beating the buzzer. Simpson, what a move around Thompson. Sets up Teske. Matthew steps in. Oh, yeah, a lot of hang time on that shot. Teske.
Look at this.
Doing it all.
Oh.
Simpson, wraparound pass. Sets up Wagner. Rockman gets the feet planted and hits the shot. Simpson! Dagger! Back-to-back Big Ten championships for Beilein and the Wolverines.
When I think about this, I think about a group we have that takes care of themselves off the floor. I go to my grave saying, they're not like party guys. They really understand right now, I got to eat right, I got to sleep right, I got to store energy. And it, over a long time, that makes a big difference. So our guys really are dedicated to the cause, to the purpose of the team, the team, the team, and I'm going to do what's ever best for the team. I'll tell you what I did. One of the smartest things is I stopped coaching it so much. We were okay. We were usually 150 out of 300 defensively, and we were usually like, you know, maybe in the top 50 to top 20 offensively. I let other people become the voice. We still did all the strategy.
It's interesting when you watch him throw, man. His ball does not have the kind of arc and touch on it that you would expect a classic pocket passer to have. It's very flat, and quite honestly, to me, it's not very impressive. And on tape, I'm not a big Josh Rosen fan. I'm just not. I just don't see a lot of the hoopla surrounding him. He was on it right from the get-go. And it was funny because he was, like, powering the football where he wanted it to go. He was like, hey, if I need to put this right here on the hip, outside, on the sideline, on this speed out, he just threw it there. And you're watching it, and you're going, see, this is not the guy who on film will spray the ball all over the place. And I think that caught people's attention because short, intermediate, and deep, he looked awesome.
I love Baker Mayfield. Mayfield. I think he's fantastic. I mean, he's won everywhere he's been. You know, he won at Lake Travis in high school. He won at Texas Tech. He won at Oklahoma, and he's won big everywhere he's been. Like, at the end of the day, you look at all the things going out the combine and all the drills, and, like, shouldn't winning matter?
The Cleveland Browns are in a great position. They got the first pick and the four pick. You go ahead and you take Barkley at number one because, I mean, the guy is a freak of nature, what he's able to do with the 40 and then his vertical leap and, you know, 29 reps on the bench press. I mean, I wish I could go 29 times at 225, but we know that's not possible anymore. And then you take that quarterback, you got your future. You got your quarterback in the future, and you got your running back in the future, and everything is set up for Dorsey, the new general manager with the Browns, for their future. And you can give some hope in Cleveland. Finally, there will be some hope in Cleveland that maybe they can get on track and end this long playoff drought.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, that's a good one. I love that line. I've heard it, I don't know, once, twice, 19 times since 1999. Yeah, not bloody likely. Welcome to hour number two of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. You know, if you listen to all of the different analysts, scouts, player personnel guys, and everything else who evaluated the quarterbacks, you're going to get a wide variety of opinions. But the one thing that I can say that it's moderately consensus is that Josh Allen has a monster arm, a once-in-a-decade-or-two type of arm. That kind of arm talent you cannot teach. The question is, can you teach reading defenses and accuracy? Baker Mayfield's arm, consensus, is way better than anybody ever thought it was. That's one thing that came out of this. And then you just heard a little bit about Josh Rosen, who was a little bit up and a little bit down, but most people think he's a very polished passer. We don't know. Oh, and then the other part, Lamar Jackson, the word that was kind of, again, almost a complete consensus on this, the word that came out was inconsistent. Tremendous talent, best athlete in the draft, but inconsistent as a passer. Is that something that can be developed with a year or two on the bench and then be brought in as a starter later on rather than a rookie first-year guy go out there and get after it? Maybe, maybe not. And, of course, Sam Darnold didn't throw, so we don't know. What do you make of the NFL scouting combine if you are a Cleveland Browns fan? That's why we turn it over to our friend Dennis Maniloff, joining us now from Cleveland. He covers the Browns. He also covers the Cavaliers, which is something the Cavaliers don't do, cover anyone. He joins us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. D-Man, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you on. I want to hit two things with you. I want to talk a little about, it's weird, you know, we're sitting here in March and spring training baseball's going on. We're not talking Indians yet. Oh, I'm sorry, we're not talking about that team that used to have that mascot that wore a feather yet. I guess I can't say the word Indians or I'm going to offend somebody. But I do want to talk to you about the number one and number four picks in the draft and then a little bit about tonight's matchup between the Cavaliers and the Pistons and figure out what in the heck is going on with Tyronn Lue's boys. Let's start with the obvious. The NFL scouting combine, Dennis, the big star of the combine, well, there were two stars of the combine, actually, a kid with one arm who bench pressed 225 pounds like 20 times with one arm and a prosthetic, which is incredible. And then, of course, the numbers put up by Saquon Barkley, who did that very same thing, but with two healthy arms 29 times, also ran a 4.4, showed an incredible vertical. And just looks like he very well may be the best player in the draft. Dennis, are you buying the Saquon Barkley Underwear Olympics title enough that he could be the number one pick of the draft for the Browns?
Well, I buy what I saw from Barkley. The numbers were eye-popping at the Underwear Olympics. I also buy what I saw from him, you know, as a Penn State player. So he has the tape to back up the combine effort, but I don't necessarily think the Browns take him at number one because the Browns are desperate at quarterback. They have to solve that problem first. For a quarterback-starved franchise, a running back is a luxury. Okay, it just is. You have to, once you get settled on your quarterback, then you can feel great about your running backs, but you've got to get the quarterback situation settled first if you're the Browns. Now, between now and the draft, it's entirely possible that they get a free agent quarterback to their liking, make a promise to him and say, you know what, you're going to be our guy for at least a couple of years with no competition. And then if that happens, then you might feel free to take Barkley. And now, The Browns should be taking quarterback number one. Doesn't mean if you're John Dorsey, you don't, you know, sing the praises of Barkley. If I'm Dorsey, I want every team in the league thinking that I'm going to take upwards of 12 players or 15 players at number one overall.
I'll get into the quarterbacks with you in a second, Dennis. Follow up on Barkley. Everybody is extraordinarily high on him from the game tape, as you pointed out. And certainly then seeing him in the scouting combine in the underwear doing the great things that he did, it solidifies that. But I might be in a very small minority here, but and maybe I'm just allowing myself to be blinded by numbers or a lack of numbers. But the game tape that I saw was always the highlight reels. I didn't see too many people paying attention to the fact that eight times he was held under 100 yards in this his junior season. Eight times under 100. Five of those times under 65 yards rushing. Now, I'm not saying that was on a steady diet of 30 carries. Some of them were, in the 20s and some of them in the teens. But when we talk about great running backs coming out of college, I've seen a heck of a lot more production. And I think of somebody, obviously, like the last great running back maybe picked in the top five, and that would be Ezekiel Elliott. I'm seeing great production numbers at this level for a lot of guys. I don't see a ton of tremendous production here from Saquon Barkley. So what is it that we're supposed to be seeing on the tape that I'm not seeing reflected in the performance and in the output in terms of numbers that make me want to think of this guy as the number one pick overall in the draft?
Yeah, that's a solid rebuttal. I mean, I said that I liked what I saw and the game tape with Penn State, but I got to admit, some of it was kick return. So when specifically I think of that Ohio State game, Ohio State, you know, had that dramatic comeback to beat Penn State in the shoe, this past season. Barkley had the monster return for the touchdown, but they did a nice job of containing him as a runner. So, you're right. I mean, there are holes in his running resume. That I'm sure will create a pause for potential suitors. But even with that, I think he's a top four pick guaranteed.
Those who say that he's a can't-miss prospect are the ones who say make him the number one pick, not necessarily because he's the best player or whatever, but it's just that if there is a question, is it Allen or is it Darnold or is it Rosen? Or is it Mayfield? If you're not sure, but you know he's a sure thing, take him number one. And then whoever isn't taken among that group that you have tightly clumped together of quarterbacks at two or three, and maybe there will be still be two or three of them left, then you take the one that you decide the best on at number four. And it might even save you a little bit of money as well, because quarterbacks taking number one make a little bit more than running backs taking number one. Any logic behind that reasoning, D-Man?
It sounds good in theory, but again, I go back to to me, it's incumbent upon the Cleveland Browns to decide on a quarterback out of this group, okay? And be bullish on, and I'm not saying you have to force it necessarily, but they can't sit there and go, well, we're not going to take a QB at one. We'll just wait for the best available QB at four. No, Not this team, not with this, you know, destitution when it comes to the quarterback position. They need to identify one of these guys as their guy, all right? Even if not everybody in at Lou Groza Boulevard is totally sold, you still have to say, look, out of all of them, we like this guy the best. And as a result, we're going to take him number one overall.
Dennis, if you were called to a meeting on Lou Groza Boulevard and they said, Dennis, who do we take? What are you telling them? What are you advising Mr. Dorsey?
Yeah, that's a great call. You know, I've tried to withhold my judgment on these guys, certainly in the case of Darnold. Yeah, by the way, let me just throw this at you. You got people, I love the combine, all right? I think you do too, to a degree. But you recognize its limitations, but still, you're allowed to love the combine, which I do. I find it funny, some people who don't like the combine think it's worthless. all of a sudden they're railing against Darnold for not throwing at the combine. It's like, well, which is it? Is the combine important or isn't it? So, but I will say, you know, as somebody who likes the combine, likes to see these guys compete, it was a little bit of an eye-opener, perhaps, that Darnold didn't throw, but he's a competitor. I mean, if you have to worry about his competitiveness after watching Ohio State, the Ohio State bowl game, then, you know, you're missing something. So, but of those four guys, I mean, my preference is probably, I would say Darnold first. Maybe, let me think here, Mayfield second, Allen third, Rosen fourth, Jackson fifth.
Wow, Rosen down at number four in that group. Why is Rosen behind Allen? Rosen is considered to be a much more polished passer. Obviously, yeah. Allen is the much bigger arm, obviously a better arm talent, one of the, you know, once-in-a-decade type of arm talents. Why do you is that why you have him over Rosen?
Well, this is where my non-psychology degree comes into play because there's something about Rosen that I just can't buy what he's selling. I mean, I just don't know about, yes, he's the purest passer of the bunch. There's no disputing that. But I don't know about his, I don't know. When I listen to him, when I watch him, there's something about him that doesn't sit right with me. And you could say, oh, well, who are you to analyze? You're right. I don't have any right to psychoanalyze somebody.
Sure,
but
you do.
It just, I wonder about his commitment, what his commitment's going to be, full bore every year. I don't know. I guess the hunger that I see from a guy like Mayfield, comes across much better than the hunger that I hear or see from Rosen. And maybe that's not fair, but that's how I see it.
You know, no, listen, you don't have nothing to apologize for because I agree with you. There's something that is inauthentic to me about Rosen. When I listen to Rosen talk and people question his – what's that?
You got it. You hit the word, inauthentic.
Yeah, and you listen to some people who are close to him out there in L.A., and he's not an inspirational kind of leader. So if you take the intangible – and you're right, we're trying to psychoanalyze a guy that we've not met. But we've listened to enough interviews on it. We've listened to enough people who know him very well that we can go ahead and do that. It's what we do. Between the leadership aspect and the, you know, can you buy what he's selling? And then the durability aspect, because he's rail thin. He would need to put on, in my opinion, 20 pounds of muscle to withstand hitting from linebackers and defensive linemen who are going to knock him to the turf after throws or, you know, certainly if they reach him on sacks. He's going to take a pounding, and I think he'll get broken in half based on his frame and his size right now. I don't know that he's a guy who wants to bulk up like that. If he did, I think he would have done it during his years at UCLA in preparation for a potential NFL career. Either he doesn't want to or he can't put weight on and keep it on, but I worry about that durability factor. So I'm with you on that, Dennis.
Hey, Bob, one more thing.
Go ahead.
We're already dealing with multiple concussions, too. I don't like that he's coming into the NFL with multiple concussions.
Very fair point as well. That's another aspect of it as well. You mentioned Mayfield as your number two, though. You know all the stories. You hear all of the stupid comparisons to Johnny Football. They're there. In fact, one of your colleagues wrote about that. I read a piece on yesterday, saying no way. He may go on to be a great player in the NFL, but wherever it is, it has to be somewhere other than Cleveland because Cleveland cannot take the same type of personality and the same type size guy so close together after doing that with Manziel and making that catastrophic decision. So you obviously aren't shying away from Baker Mayfield. Tell me why.
Well, I liked what I saw from him in games in general. I liked what I saw from him in big games. He seemed like a guy who could deliver the ball from the pocket without, you know, too much of a constraint in terms of the height. He was able to manipulate the pocket better than I thought. I didn't feel like he was a guy who, again, because of the lack of height, maybe was predisposed to leaking out and taking off. It seemed to me like he was okay with stepping up or sliding in the pocket and then still delivering the ball. not a run first, pass second guy, but a pass first, run second guy. You know, and yes, I don't like some of the stuff. I admit it. I don't like the crotch grab. I don't like the flag plant. I hope some of that is just college related stuff. You know, the rah rah college element. And once he gets to the pros, he's going to outgrow it. But I guess, as you say, you could have said the same thing about Manziel, and Manziel obviously didn't outgrow it. So you wonder, maybe, and Mayfield's heard it all. I mean, he's heard the comparisons. He's been asked about it ad infinitum. So, you know, he seems to come across a little differently than Manziel did. And then again, that's me, amateur psychologist.
Yeah.
But I think the bottom line is, the difference between Manziel and Baker Mayfield, in my opinion, is Manziel was broken play guy. He thrived off broken plays. He thrived outside the pocket. Mayfield, to me, is more of a pocket creator. He's a guy who's willing to hang in and deliver from the pocket than have to scramble and do, you know, have broken plays all the time.
I completely agree. And by the way, as he hangs in that pocket, he's the anti-Josh Rosen, because you can see he's got a build. He's got some strength to him. He's got a solid core. Some might even say he looks a little heavy, a little chunky. I think most of that is his rib pads, you know, that go down. But when you see him play, you can see this is a guy, even his arms, you can see this is a guy who can take the hits and pop up and continue to play, whereas I question that with Rosen. D-Man, in the interest of time, I got to make an awkward pivot here to talk NBA with you. Obviously, Cavaliers and Pistons tonight, two teams doing similar things, strangely enough, and that's losing more than they should be. The Pistons are so bad right now, they are on the verge of ripping Stan Van Sloppy's basketball presidency of operations from him, as well as removing him as coach if they don't make the playoffs. The Pistons are just in a bad way right now, even after getting Blake Griffin. And the Cavaliers, Lord knows what's going on since the All-Star break. They made that huge trade, had a couple of really nice wins against good teams before the break, came out of the break. And I'm going to say something here, Dennis, that is going to sound very mean to Tyronn Lue, but it is what it is. I feel like when they just came out and played against Boston and Oklahoma City right after the trade and before the All-Star break, they played. And when they play on their own, they did well. But since they've been coached by Ty Lue for 2 weeks now, they're terrible together. It seems like the more instruction they get, the more coaching they get, the worse they get, because they're doing it his way. And I know that sounds awful, but I don't know what else to make of it. They're not getting better and more in tune with one another as time goes by. They're getting further apart, particularly on the defensive end, which has been obviously the same problem before the trade with the other dead weight that was cut loose. So that's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing with this Cavaliers team?
Well, I hear what you're saying, Bob, and there is some truth to it. I mean, when they were freelancing in those first two games, it was a sight to behold. You know, the athleticism was in full throttle, and they played well and beat two good teams on the road. Since then, since the coaching has occurred, it hasn't been as good, nearly as good, certainly on the defensive end. I think there are a couple of things, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Ty Lue here. I'm just trying to view it through the way he does. Number one, you have to coach a team in the playoffs. The freelancing stops in the playoffs because the opponent sees you over and over, and they're going to be able to take out the freelancing from your game, unless, of course, you have otherworldly one-on-one talents, as the Cavs did a couple of years ago, or the past 3 years with LeBron and Kyrie. This team that they have, that they take into the playoffs, is going to have to play with some kind of structure, certainly on the defensive end. So Lou's saying, I have to implement this structure before the playoffs, and maybe this is a necessary evil, or I hope it's a necessary evil, where we take a step back as we learn what we need to learn, so that we can take the necessary steps forward once we get to the playoffs, as opposed to, okay, you guys, just go do what you want to do until the playoffs, and then let's just hope that our freelance style of basketball works. You know, that's how I'm viewing it. And I will say this, I'm not making excuses for the Cavs, but I've watched these last few games very closely. It's amazing how many shots the opponent has made in the final, within the final 8 seconds of the shot clock. And that is something that, in other words, the Cavs defense has not been atrocious for the majority of the shot clock. It's just that the opponent is willing to wait them out to make that one final pass to get the guy open. That is the fault of the Cavs. There's no doubt. But this is different than what I saw before the trade deadline, where the opponent was able to pick apart the Cavs in a matter of tic-tac-toe, three passes and the ball was in the basket. So that, to me, is a little bit of an encouraging sign that these athletes they've got, the basketball IQ guys they have right now, are more difficult to solve than the previous group. But that doesn't, again, excuse the fact that their defense hasn't been good.
Last thing before you go, Dennis Mantloff. Series starts tomorrow. 7 games. Rockets or Warriors?
I still got to go with the Warriors. Still got to go with the champs. They're at home. Are they at home? Who's got the best record right now?
The Rockets do. Rockets have the best record in the West.
All right. You know what? I think the Rockets would take game one, but I still like the champs overall. I think they're just deep enough to wear down the Rockets. It'd be a series. And plus, let's not forget, Bob, it's so easily forgotten in the NBA, the stink bombs that certain players drop in big games. Amazing how many people forget what Harden did at the end of last playoffs. And the absolutely atrocious finish to the playoffs that James Harden had.
I don't forget that at all. Yeah. But I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt only because this is a team, Dennis. Now that Chris Paul is there, I don't think that happens again. And this team, okay. And I heard the stat this morning, and I'd have to double check it because I didn't go through the schedule game by game to see it. But I think they are 37-3 when the two of those guys are playing. Because Chris Paul has missed a little bit of time, but they're 37-3 when they're together. We're talking about, D-Man, a team that lost 3 out of 41. Now we're saying, or you're saying, when I asked you who was going to win that series, you said they would lose 4 out of 7. That's hard for me to see right now as well as that team is playing together.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. The Rockets are terrific. If you would ask me right now, I thought you might even say Cavs versus Raptors. I'm taking the Raptors. At this moment, I'm taking the Raptors. Now, that's why there's still time left in the season. But even with LeBron, this Cavaliers team right now is not a match for the Toronto Raptors. And possibly not a match for the Celtics either.
Well, I'm going to go one step further. If they were playing a series of 7 games starting tomorrow, Dennis Mantloff, I don't know that I would pick the Cavaliers to beat the 76ers.
Wow.
The way they played them, the way they played them last week, the Cavaliers have absolutely no one to match up with Joel Embiid. Nobody. LeBron would have to guard him, which of course takes him away from guys like Ben Simmons. I just think, boy, and I know this might be overreactionary, but boy, oh boy, the way I see those two teams playing and the way I saw them match up with one another last week, I don't know that I'd want to play the 76ers 7 times if I'm a Cavalier.
I hear you, Bob.
Dennis, great stuff as always, my friend.
There's still time in the regular season, though.
I'm sorry, one more time.
There's still time in the regular season.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And it's not over yet. That's what I'm just talking about, the way I see things at this particular moment in time. Maybe a little bit of panic, maybe a little bit of overreaction, but I'll tell you what, that's how I feel at this moment in time. Dennis, great stuff, my friend. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. It's 4:36. Let's get a bottom of the hour local sports center coming up after I ask you a very important question. Need a new roof? $1 down. Need new siding? $1 down. Need new windows? $1 down. You can get a new look, your choice, roof, siding, or windows for your home for $1 down. Why? That's the power of 7 years interest-free. Don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get that roof, that siding, the windows you've always wanted for $1 down by calling 877-WINDOWS. That's WeatherSeal. Call WeatherSeal today at 1-877-WINDOWS and check them out online at weathersealhomeservices.com. Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, joins us next right here on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed, and it's 4:45 as we roll onward. Don't forget, we'll take you until 5 o'clock. Drive time coming your way then with Mike Miller. So 15 minutes of outstanding awesome left here. Then we turn it over to the driver. Jim Christian with us alongside, and pleased to be joined now once again by the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on the Buckeyes Radio Network, Paul Keels. Talk a little Ohio State basketball, Big Ten tournament style. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to hear you're back and hope you're feeling better, Bob.
I am indeed. Yeah. You know, I was feeling okay before too, but it just gets to the point sometimes where you don't sound like you. You know, you're in the business. You know, if you don't sound you feel good, that's the problems.
I understand entirely. I had to deal with that flu bug earlier this year, so I understand.
It hits us all at one time or another. You just hope for, you know, for, you know, that it's more timely than not. So, what was not timely for the Buckeyes, obviously, was playing Penn State in the Big Ten tournament. Boy, you talk about a team that just has your number, and the way that they lost three times in one calendar season to, you know, in one season to the Nittany Lions is so goofy. A last-minute shot, and then, you know, a pretty healthy blowout loss, and then a dunk to, you know, the game-winning dunk with about 2 seconds left. You know, they've lost about every conceivable way they can to Penn State. What do you make of this? Is this just one of those weird matchup things, or what is it that the Buckeyes, you know, don't have that they need against the Nittany Lions?
Well, and we talked after that last loss in State College. It is a bad matchup. I think when you've got Tony Carr at 6'5 as a point guard, and they purposely were trying to get him to play down low against both C.J. Jackson and against Andrew Dockage, and then even at times though Jayshon Tate was covering him. And not only is he a bad matchup offensively, he is defensively because of what he's able to do to disrupt Ohio State's guards. You know, the other big factor was the way Penn State was able to collect numerous offensive rebounds in the first half to give them second chance points. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me to remember what it is. And, you know, and then it was one of those games where, you know, anytime you've got a one possession decision, you always look back at particular plays, you know, where this could have happened, where that could have happened that would have made the difference. So it is one of those tough matchups. Penn State certainly trying to play themselves off the bubble, which they may not still be off of. The encouraging thing, Bob, was we saw Kata Bates-Diop assert himself, you know, showing why he was the player of the year in the conference. We saw Andre Wesson probably for the first time since the Purdue game really show that he could be an offensive threat. So there were some good things. And the other part of it is we know that they're going to the NCAA tournament, meaning Ohio State. So it kind of leaves not a terribly bad taste in your mouth, but it is a little disappointing thinking they couldn't have improved their possible seed and things like that and have a chance of winning a tournament championship.
No question about it, and that's kind of where I want to steer the conversation now is what is the impact of this loss as they move on toward the tournament? Let's highlight what you just said, too. Kata Bates-Diop is the conference player of the year. Chris Holtmann is the coach of the year. If somebody would have told you those two things were going to happen back last October, Paul, that would have been a pretty surprising thing to hear.
Well, I think one would have had to have happened for the other to happen. You know, if Kata has that kind of performance, then maybe that does help Chris Holtmann and vice versa. But, you know, deservedly so for both of them. I think, you know, even though Kata struggled a little bit in the last couple of weeks of the season, when you look at the overall year, a very deserving honor. What Chris Holtmann did was nothing short of extraordinary, combining all of the things that were part of this that we've talked about all year. And, you know, I think certainly Jayshon Tate being named all conference and, you know, that he's a guy that a lot of people thought could get on the first team all league. He ended up making second team. So, you know, I think that really went a long way in pointing out what kind of season this has been for Ohio State.
So having that kind of season and putting up the numbers that they have and, you know, 24 wins, you know, thus far and 15-3 in the conference, all of that stuff is not going to go away. However, it is going to be tempered if the season ends the way, you know, the conference tournament ended. And obviously they do have an opportunity now to make a little bit of a run in the NCAA. So my question to you is, how far do the Buckeyes, and we'll talk about seedings and all that sort of thing, Paul, but how far do the Buckeyes need to go? Do they need to win a couple and maybe make it to 16 to really put an exclamation point on this season? If they do less than that, will the end of the season take away some of the enthusiasm that the Buckeye program had built under Chris Holtmann in his first year?
You know, Bob, I think if they were to get to the second weekend, that would be, you know, just flat-out thrilling for this program, considering where they came from. You know, a loss in the first game would probably be disappointing. If they got to the second game and lost there, I don't know that too many people would be, you know, of course, depending on who to and how the game played out, I don't know that that would be so upsetting to people. Because really, when you look at this whole year, I think everything is kind of an added bonus right now. You know, we were hoping when the season started that this could be a team that very possibly could get into the NIT. Nobody knew, you were going to get the contributions from Andrew Dockett. You did. Nobody knew that C.J. Jackson would show the improvement over the course of the whole year. He was the second most improved player in the Big Ten as far as offensive output. You knew what Jayshon Tate would give you. You had an idea of what Kaden would do based on the expectations and the things that the previous coaching staff talked about last summer. But really, for it to all come together and to think that this team could have two wins over two top five teams, I think that would have really surprised people in thinking that they would go into the last week with a chance at possibly winning the Big Ten championship, either outright or shared. Nobody would have thought that at the beginning of the season. So I think if they could get to the second weekend, Bob, I think that would be just outstanding.
Yeah, I could not agree more. That would be a great accomplishment for this program at this stage of its new development. We're talking to Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes. What do you think this will do, though, the loss in their first game of the Big Ten tournament? It wasn't the first round. Obviously, they didn't have to play in the first round. But the loss to Penn State, they didn't get a win in the Big Ten tournament. What does that do to their seeding, do you think, wherever, whatever region it might be? How low do you think that'll bring them?
You know, the guess right now, Bob, is I think that you're probably looking at a 5 or a 6 seed. You know, had they gotten to the point where they could have maybe gotten to the championship of the Big Ten, maybe they could have been playing for a 4 or 3 seed, depending on what happens in the other tournaments this year. I don't know that. I mean, getting to 3 might be really, really high, but you know, 4 would have been a comfortable spot. But I, you know, right now you're probably looking at 5 or 6, and very possibly what that does too, it has them being shipped further away from home. You know, there was a lot of hope that maybe they could get to go to Pittsburgh, but you know, I know a lot of the bracketology sites now are saying either Boise or San Diego. But quite honestly, just for this team to be in the tournament is a big thing by itself. But, you know, I think that's probably what it did. Got them positioned at a 5, maybe a 6 seed.
I was talking to somebody from up in Ann Arbor, I'm sorry to say.
understand.
Last
got to
hour.
Check in what's going on up there.
Yeah, well, they second year in a row. It's unbelievable what they've been able to do and to win that Big Ten Conference tournament. It's really an incredible thing. And they're talking about they did it the hard way, too. They didn't have to beat teams that upset the top teams. They beat the top teams. They beat Michigan State in the semi. They beat Purdue in the final. So all credit to the Wolverines. But I was just asking our guest, same thing I'm going to ask you. When the committee seeds these teams like this, we talk about this almost similarly in the football season with the football committee, playoff committee. Should it be more based on who they are right now or what they have been all season? Because the Buckeyes right now have lost 3 of their last 5. But the Buckeyes all season have been one of the, you know, top teams in the Big Ten. And you know, we reached into the top 10, obviously, nationally in the rankings as little as a month ago. So is it a season-long, this is what your body of work is as they seed these teams? Or is it, well, this is who you are at this moment in time as we get started?
You know, Bob, it's probably some of both, and also I think what goes into play is who have you beaten, and that's why, you know, Penn State is put in a questionable position right now because their 3 best wins are all against the same team, Ohio
that's
State.
Right.
I think that's why Nebraska is in a real shaky position because they and Nebraska, and I didn't realize this till the weekend. Somebody told me that Nebraska only played the top 3 teams in the Big Ten, I believe, on the road and only once, being Michigan State, Ohio State, and Purdue, if that's correct. So it's probably a combination of all of those things, but Michigan's scary right now. They're playing good. They're on a roll. They've got depth. They've got experience. They've got size. They can shoot from the outside. They can take you inside. John Beilein's team always plays outstanding defense. It's a shame that it wasn't a Michigan State matchup in the championship game instead of the semis, but you know, that's a team that just is really on a mission and hit their stride. And you know, we saw what Ohio State played up there a few weeks ago. Even though you push them and you put them to the test, they've just got so many people who can do so many things to help that basketball team. And, you know, they get a big play yesterday from their backup center, John Teske. So, you probably think that it's going to be a combination of all of those things, as well as their schedule. But what's going to be interesting now for the Big Ten teams, Bob, is this unique position of waiting a week and seeing what happens in other conferences. And, you know, you're probably hoping for all of the Big Ten teams, and especially the bubble teams, that the one big leagues, their bid goes to who it should be and not somebody losing that shouldn't. And, you know, you got to give consideration to maybe a second team from a conference that would only get one.
That's a great point as well. Jim Cushion's with us as well, as always. Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, and trying to figure out what the committee's going to do is always one of those fun exercises that a ton of people like to take. And random FYI, guys, I'm looking at Lenardi's bracketology bracket up to date for today. You mentioned Penn State and Nebraska. They're both listed on the next four outline, and obviously with the Big Ten tournament done, nothing more they can do. Where I was going to go with this, Paul, was I'm seeing the same thing you kind of alluded to, that that right now Lenardi has the Buckeyes on the five line, which means if that's where they are, that means they would get one of those really good mid-major type of champs, the way the bracket's usually been filled out by the committee the last couple of years. I mean, somebody like a Middle Tennessee or a New Mexico State or Loyola, who just won the Missouri Valley. No matter who it is, though, how much of a problem are the Buckeyes in if the team they play has a good backcourt, good guard play? We talked before, Paul, you and I, that's part of why Penn State had success against the Buckeyes in their three games this year. It was only two when I talked to you about this. And usually then you always have the 5-12 upset possibility. How much of a factor do you think that's going to be in terms of the Buckeyes' chances if they get a team like a Middle Tennessee or somebody, maybe a lower conference, but they have a good backcourt, which is the thing that's given the Buckeyes trouble?
Well, then usually, Jim, in a case like that, then they probably don't have anybody that matches up with either Katie Bates Diop and Caleb Wesson or both of them at the same time. So I think that's where the trade-off could come. And here's the other thing. If you look at, you know, what's happened to Ohio State in the last few weeks, they've lost to teams that they've played for a second and a third time. Sometimes once you get out of your conference and that familiarity is gone, when you play somebody that you've not seen and they've not seen you physically on the court, sometimes that's where you can kind of get the momentum spun back in the right direction. And as well as everybody scouts and looks at video, certainly nobody's going to know Ohio State like Penn State did, as many tendencies and as many things. Because we saw in that game Friday night when Ohio State and some of their players wanted to make their specific moves, namely Jayshon Tate driving to his left, Penn State, because of the familiarity, they were able to erase that. So if you do get somebody that presents that kind of problem, it's not probably going to be as big a talented guard like a Tony Carr or Josh Reeves from Penn State. But even if it is, then most likely they're not going to have the low presence, the down low presence, that also would cause the problems against Kate Bates Diop and Caleb Wesson.